Hello and welcome to the 46th Annual Canaccord Genuity Growth Conference. I'm Alex Vukasin, and I'm a member of the Life Science Tools and Diagnostics team here at Canaccord Genuity. We're pleased to have Biodesix here with us today. The company leverages multi-omics and artificial intelligence to provide diagnostic solutions with a focus in lung disease. Biodesix is the first company to offer five blood-based Medicare-covered tests for the same patient population with best-in-class turnaround times. Representing the company, we have Scott Hutton, CEO, and Robin Cowie, CFO. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alex.
So to start, could you just provide a brief overview of Biodesix for everyone here, and as well as some of the highlights of recent business performance and some key drivers of 2Q revenue?
Yeah, you know, to build off your wonderful description and introduction, as Alex said, we have five on-market tests for lung cancer, positively impacting that continuum of care. The first two are precancer diagnosis, where we help physicians identify those lung nodules that are likely malignant or likely benign. And then post-cancer diagnosis, three tests that help with treatment or therapy guidance and selection. We also have a development services portion of the business where we partner and collaborate with biopharmaceutical companies, other diagnostic companies, and partners. There we're doing test discovery, development, we're supporting clinical trial research, and providing molecular insights at different time points. It's really critical. That portion of the business accounts for just under 10% of our annual revenue. As Alex highlighted, exceptionally strong growth. We've taken great pride in building out the commercial channel that we have. We now have over 100 sales reps in the United States focused on this call point, and the main call point being pulmonology, but now supported with a concerted, intentional effort in primary care. The growth recently has been fueled by Salesforce expansion. We're very excited to continue to grow and invest in that sales channel. We have disclosed that we'll end this year at approximately 120 contributing sales reps. We also expanded last year into primary care in a very intentional way, where we're focusing on the pulmonology referral pathway, supporting those primary care physicians that are referring patients in to pulmonologists. And then lastly, we came out with an exceptionally large clinical trial result earlier this year, or study result, where we were able to expand utilization of the Nodify CDT test in those nodules that are 4 millimeter to just under 8 millimeters. And that expansion was received exceptionally well.
So you reaffirmed full year guidance of 108 to 114 million, so midpoint around 25% year-over-year growth. And you maintain your expectations of achieving positive adjusted EBITDA on a run rate basis in the near term. Given the strength in the first half, how should we think about the assumptions embedded in the second half outlook? And what are some of the key swing factors that could drive performance towards the higher low point of that guidance?
Yeah, I just referenced those smaller nodules. You know, we just introduced that a couple of months ago. So we're still seeing broad adoption across both primary care and pulmonology, and with new ordering physicians and those that have ordered for some time. So we feel very strong that that can continue to drive excellent growth and expansion in the second half of the year. We had a strong year-over-year comp from last year, so we think that we've set ourselves up for continued sustainable growth for a period of time. And you highlighted it. We are very focused on this march towards profitability. There are not many diagnostic companies that have achieved it and maintained it, and we think it's critically important to do so.
So just building off of that march towards profitability, so beyond the near-term drivers of your profitability ramp, how should we think about your path to free cash flow breakeven?
Yeah, Robin, do you want to take that?
Yeah, it's heavily dependent on the growth of the top line, but in addition to that, we have a very cost-disciplined approach to our operations. As we've seen over the last several quarters, strong and growing operational leverage, and it's continuing that cost discipline approach and combining with improved rep productivity and new sales reps to reach and maintain profitability.
Great. And so moving back to the commercial organization a bit, so you just spoke to it a bit. You averaged around 104 sales representatives in the field in 2Q, continuing to ramp towards that 120 towards year end. How should we think about the upper bound in terms of what you're targeting over time for your sales force? And how do you balance the opportunity to accelerate hiring against the objective of maintaining operating leverage and progressing towards profitability as well?
Yeah, I think the key word there was balance. There really is a balance. You know, could we grow faster? Certainly. But we want to be mindful of bringing on the right sales professional, putting them in the right position to be a success, and then giving them an opportunity to scale and contribute. You know, for us, we have consistently hired about 6 to 8 sales professionals a quarter. That's what this plan supported this year. And as we look towards next year, right now, we're currently planning on doing the same next year. I think you bring up a good point, which is how much more do we have to grow and invest? I think by the end of next year, I think we'll have great representation and coverage. Then we can be opportunistic as we bring on an exceptionally large account and we need support, invest in that. But we're getting there. And I think we've demonstrated we have a very efficient, effective model. And our industry-leading gross margins at north of 82%, you know, we've continued to guide that those will stay exceptionally strong. So it really is about taking a cost-conscious, very concerted effort to make sure that this is a long-term investment that everybody can see providing a return.
Great. And so moving towards the primary care aspect of your sales force, so volumes on that end increased 133% year-over-year, and they still represent around 15% of total volume, so that's kind of consistent with last quarter. How are you thinking about this dynamic? Should we expect PCP volumes to stay around those levels, or do you believe it realistically this ratio could kind of fluctuate over time?
I think it's going to fluctuate. I think, you know, a year ago, we went from 8% to 11%. As you highlighted, last two quarters have been at 15%. And so for us, it really is about ensuring that we can get to those patients that are in primary care. The denominator is smaller, right? We've been doing it a significantly less time. And so as it continues to grow, we think there's going to be good balance across both primary care and pulmonology. You know, we referenced the sales force expansion this year. The majority of the sales reps we've hired this year have been in primary care. And so we've invested in that. And so we fully expect it to continue to grow. You know, the 15% that you referenced, you know, for us, what really offset that was 31% growth in pulmonology. And so for us, we felt like that was exceptionally strong and a very mature effort. And we were proud to see that. And we fully expect both to grow equally strong.
So just sticking with the primary care sales force here, what have you learned about the adoption curve among the primary care physicians relative to the pulmonologists?
Yeah, you know, great question. It's one of the greatest insights. You know, primary care physicians are well-informed and knowledgeable about molecular testing and diagnostics. Pulmonologists historically haven't been. We were the first and we're the only company offering this. So we do a lot of education, a lot of training, a lot of discussions about how it fits into their workflow. When you walk into a primary care physician, they're constantly ordering diagnostics, right? Secondarily, pulmonologists, when we started, did not have blood draw or phlebotomy capabilities. We built that network out to support that growth. When you go into primary care, they not only have that, oftentimes they have a blood draw facility adjacent, right, on site. So there are a lot of learnings that would demonstrate that primary care, it's an easier yes, you can get in, they understand the value. The difference being is that they see a broader base of patients. Whereas a pulmonologist, we know that on any given day, you're going to see a lot of patients that have a higher likelihood of Nodify testing.
And so one theme from the quarter that we touched on really briefly already was recent small nodule clinical data, and that is a potential growth driver kind of going forward. Could you just provide some additional color about this study and what the data showed, and how does this evidence change the way physicians think about blood-based testing across the lung nodule?
Yeah, Robin, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, happily. Our test, and this was really focusing on Nodify CDT, was validated in a broad population, but this was looking at over 1,000 different patients and various subgroups. Physicians have a lot of questions about where to order the tests, and normally when they start with a narrow band of patients. This publication showed that we could identify patients that were likely malignant without significant increase in false positives, showing them that in these different subgroups that the test works really well and can help them. So that was published in late first quarter, and we had a lot of physician demand. So when that came out, we saw really nice growth from physicians, not just in the small nodules, but then because the test is more top of mind, they remember to order it in more of their broader patient population. So we saw a nice increase in tests per physician.
Great. And so are you seeing this pattern consistently across both primary care and pulmonology?
Yes, it's been very consistent. So not only the demand for ordering in the smaller nodules, but also the increased ordering by physician when they start and adopt a larger patient population.
So let's turn to ASP just for a quick second and reimbursement as well. So you noted average revenue per test improved year over year due to some expanded payer coverage and continued RCM improvements that you continuously do sequentially every quarter. So what are some of the primary levers available to drive additional ASP expansion from here? And could you just kind of talk about, perhaps break down if the expansion was more so driven by Nodify CDT, that was a big focus of the quarter, or was it kind of broad-based across Nodify testing and perhaps VeriStrat as well?
We saw new coverage policies and contracts for Nodify CDT, XL2, and VeriStrat. So saw nice ASP growth across each of those three tests. Nodify XL2 is a higher price point, so as a contributor, it's a larger contributor to our revenue, but the adoption from payers has been consistent with CDT and XL2. Big drivers of payer adoption are guidelines and really demand. So as more physicians order and believe in the test and see utility in the test, that puts pressure on the payers. And other payers want to follow somebody else making a policy. So as you get more and more coverage policies, you build momentum in the payer space as well.
So speaking about the payers, my next question, could you just provide an update on how those private payer contracting efforts are going? Any material updates that you can give us on that end?
Yeah, we've been really consistent. So we take a very consistent approach to our private payers, so wanting to ensure that patient access and payment rates are consistent across our payer groups. And so that's a strategic focus for our market access team.
And so let's look at margin scalability for a second here. So you just spoke to your gross margins, so about 82% in this quarter. You're guiding towards around the 80% mark for the full year. Extremely strong for the category, just diagnostics in general. So gross margins at the 80% level, is this sustainable long term? What levers are there left to kind of move to, I don't know, for any more incremental expansion there? I mean, they're already insanely high, but just.
Yeah, we're very proud of them. As I mentioned, we have a very cost-disciplined approach. We also spend a lot of time on our operational efforts to try and continue to make changes and improvements to increase efficacy and efficiency. We think that maintaining in that low 80% is absolutely viable, although we're continuing additional projects to try and make improvements. I'm always hesitant to promise additional improvements when we're already above 80%, but it remains an important key focus for us operationally.
Speaking about operations, so as volumes continue to expand, I mean, sequentially, just fantastic volume growth from some of the dynamics you just discussed. How should we think about future laboratory investment relative to gross margin and capital efficiency?
We are part of the projects that we've been working on. Improving our laboratory processes means that we've made significant improvements in our capacity. So we've got years of capacity before we would need any material investment other than just refreshing equipment.
And so let's talk about your development services portfolio. Obviously, you spoke around 10% of revenue roughly, but still it's something important to discuss here. Looking at 1Q, you had a pull forward. Looking at 2Q, sequentially down a bit, but biopharma biotech funding has been improving. You briefly touched on some of the dynamics at play there. You've spoken in the past about traditionally sequential improvements in kind of like the contracted revenue there. Can you just kind of elaborate on the health of that business? And where do you see that kind of as a percentage of overall revenue and as a percentage of just your overall business offering over time?
Yeah, it's a great question. I highlighted earlier that it's critically important to us. That business provides insights into what biopharmaceutical companies are exploring, where they're investing, and where they anticipate trying to positively impact patient care. It also gives us the opportunity to partner with other diagnostic companies, collaborating on other tests. And so those insights are invaluable. It has consistently ranged anywhere from 6%-10%-ish of our annual revenue. We fully anticipate that it'll be there this year and next year. We think that's a kind of a good trajectory for us. We've got five team members that focus on that. So their sales rep productivity is exceptionally high and large. We feel really good about that. We think it's an exceptional team. They've built really strong, trusted, collaborative relationships. And so for them, as they continue to engage with biopharmaceutical companies and diagnostic partners, we're really looking for continuation of ongoing studies and expansion. And so we've seen nice growth there. You highlighted what we call in term dollars under contract, but not yet recognized. We've seen significant improvement in growth in that over time. We fully expect that to be the case. That team is out there meeting with a number of biopharmaceutical companies on a weekly basis. And so we think we've put ourselves in a good position to offer our broad portfolio of tests, but to also offer our testing services and our capabilities. And so the ability to help discover and develop bespoke assays, you know, those things are differentiators for us. And Robin highlighted the gross margins. We've demonstrated that we can offer a test that has a strong gross margin, has rapid turnaround times, and both of those things create value for those partners. So we fully expect to share more on that growth and expansion, and we're eager to disclose more because we think we've got some exciting things currently being discussed.
So you've had a lot of success with your five Medicare covered tests. I think something could be important to touch upon here would be your pipeline. So, especially given your planned R&D update around the November AMP meeting. So could you frame the broader pipeline opportunity and how you're prioritizing opportunities across risk of recurrence or ROR, a pipeline test, MRD, VeriStrat and prostate cancer, and other potential oncology applications?
Yeah, you know, we highlighted going back towards the middle to end of the pandemic, a partnership that we engaged in with Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And, you know, in our partnership with them, that's what has fueled a number of these activities. It's extremely collaborative and engaging. You know, they provide the clinical data, the patient outcomes, and the samples. We provide the kind of the know-how, the equipment, and we're collaborating on not only developing or, you know, discovering and developing new tests, but looking at some of our existing tests and can we expand utilization. And I think that's the way to think about VeriStrat. VeriStrat was our first test discovered. It's a very unique test in the sense that it, in essence, measures a patient's immune status. And so as you think of a patient battling a cancer or a disease, you know, what we really want to highlight is as the cancer, you know, subverted the immune system or compromised the immune system, and if so, whatever treatment they're on, pivot to another treatment because that one's not working. That has benefited us for years. That data is exceptionally robust. The clinical trial we had around VeriStrat was INSIGHT. It's over 5,000 patients with a number of different treatments. We've closed that study and are currently targeting ASCO of next year to begin publishing. We think that'll continue to fuel some of the discovery and development efforts that will enable our pipeline. Now, that fits more into the latter half. That's post-cancer diagnosis where we focus on treatment guidance and therapy selection. We feel that that's still a robust field. There's a lot of investment there. And that's also where we would put the risk of recurrence and MRD efforts. MRD right now is exceptionally hot and prominent. We all can understand and see the value from ongoing surveillance and monitoring. We feel like we're going to have a unique offering, and we're eager to start to disclose more about that here in November at the AMP meeting.
That's great. And so as these products close in on commercialization, to what extent can you leverage existing lung-focused commercial infrastructure, payer relationships, and clinical evidence, and your clinical evidence platform as well?
Yeah, you know, I think when we started Biodesix, we really were focused on building the best diagnostic company possible. And so whether it's our quality management system, our clinical tools, we built them as if we were going to be a Fortune 500 company. So Robin highlighted infrastructure investment is minimal. Internal team investment is minimal. Capabilities, minimal investment needed. So is there opportunity to scale and leverage that? There certainly is. As we add additional products and even as we expand our biopharmaceutical partnerships, we can leverage that team. And so we highlighted the cost-disciplined approach, and we've run very lean, but we think we can continue to do so and be very opportunistic as we expand into potentially other disease states, but more importantly, continuing to ensure that our lung-focused sales team has more products in their bag.
So inclusion into the Fortune 500, you know, great goal to have. Just thinking, I guess, perhaps more medium term, how should we think about the pipeline's potential contribution to your your growth profile, you know, beyond Sonatify, I guess?
Yeah, you know, obviously we have to get there. We have to develop the products, we have to have the clinical data, and then we have to get the reimbursement. And so you'd never want to underappreciate all that goes into that. We have a strong team that's done it repeatedly, and so I feel very confident in our ability to do so. I highlighted the MRD space. It is a massive, massive addressable market. I think there's room for a number of competitors, and so I think that has the ability to be significant and material, but it won't be in the next 6 to 12 months. It's gonna be further out than that. So our pipeline is still on the horizon. It's not something that's imminent. And again, as we talk through kind of what we're doing at AMP and give greater detail, I think you'll start to see the cadence and the timeline and how all that slots. But I will state, we're very eager to continue to demonstrate what our development team not only can do, but what they have done and they continue to do. We think we've got one of the best development teams and laboratory service teams, and I think it'll be an exciting opportunity to demonstrate that.
So looking at some of your more important studies here, so let's try to clarify for a brief second. For those who may be less familiar with the study, could you discuss some of the key findings from the interim analysis and why they're important, and what metrics and milestones are you most focused on for the future readouts?
Yeah, so we kicked off CLARIFY almost 2 years ago now. It is a retrospective study, so what we did is we went into some of our larger orders of Nodify. We pulled those patients that had received Nodify testing and were able to immediately document what was the one-year outcome and the two-year outcome. We're able to look at comorbidities, other things by doing that chart review. So it really becomes a database and a repository by which we can pull and mine data. And so we've got over 2,000 patients enrolled now, all of them with minimum one-year follow-up, many with two-year follow-up. And so we began, as you said, slicing and dicing that. We did an interim analysis. We have a number of studies that we have submitted for publication. Can't discuss many of those until they're accepted and out of embargo. But the best way to think about it is we're looking to not only reinforce clinical utility that we already have, but start to expand utilization. And so one of those that's out on the horizon that I'm eager to talk about is we have done an analysis of Nodify testing compared to PET scans. And so we feel confidently that we're gonna be favorable in that comparison. And so putting that out there so that physicians don't just blindly order a PET scan for every single lung patient and then ignore it, let's, instead of spending money, let's actually do something like a blood-based test that gives us actionable results in a shorter period of time with a more positive outcome. That's how we're looking at that. It really is about being aggressive, being competitive, expanding and broadening utilization possibility. There's a number of other comparators, like time to diagnosis. We're also looking at stage shift. Will the utilization of Nodify allow physicians to identify cancer sooner? The one thing that we all know, regardless of the cancer type, if you can identify and detect that cancer sooner, you increase the likelihood of a positive outcome. So, we're eager to present and publish more on that. It is quite, right now, it's quite a valuable resource towards us, and we'll continue to invest in it.
And so you kind of touched on it really briefly, but anything you can just elaborate on really briefly about any upcoming publications or presentations or potential data around CHEST or AMP? Like, just what should we think about, like, the cadence of evidence generation over the next, like, 12 to 18 months?
Yeah, you know, we've always valued data. Robin highlighted kind of our reimbursement strategy, our strong pricing. That doesn't happen without good data development, and so we're constantly looking to mine data and publish and present. We aren't so much focused on holding it for CHEST or AMP or ASCO. We really want a regular cadence of publications out there. I highlighted the INSIGHT study and referenced that we're really timing is setting us up for ASCO. Hopefully there, CLARIFY is gonna be an ongoing effort at all times. We also had our prospective randomized trial called ALTITUDE. We've currently stopped enrolling. Now we're monitoring those patients to a minimum of one-year follow-up, and so that won't occur until later this year, and so that's something we'll be looking at for next year. But we're gonna continue to ensure that anything that we push out as a product has good data to support its clinical use. And the Nodify test right now have the broadest base of both clinical evidence and clinical validity on the market for anything in lung nodule management. So, We're proud of that, and we're going to continue to invest in it.
We have time for maybe like one or two more really briefly. Just on competition, you've previously noted there's basically no direct competitors that have, you know, provide meaningful competition, and it could remain, you know, many years away, perhaps 3 to 5 years. What do you view as one of the largest barriers to entry in this market specifically?
Yeah, before we get to barriers, it's why is there an opportunity? And I think many forget that lung cancer is still the deadliest of all cancers in the United States. We've made significant progress with smoking cessation and awareness, but on an annual basis, we see more and more people diagnosed with lung cancer that are never smokers. And so it highlights that this disease is not going away. I also look at it and say there have been a lot of, whether it's drugs, treatments, diagnostics that have failed. It's hard, it's difficult, which, and you know, hence is why it's one of the deadliest. More people in the United States will die of lung cancer this year than colorectal, prostate, and breast combined. And so that's the opportunity. We need competition, we need more investment, and we welcome it. And I think it's in the diagnostic front, the test with the best data should win. I think for us, we've distanced ourselves from competition by building a really strong IP portfolio. We talked about investment in that data development, and we don't take that lightly. We want to take that as an advantage, but most importantly, we have the only, direct sales force focused on pulmonology. And so with over 100 sales reps, we fully welcome the opportunity to collaborate with others, bring new tests into the bag, like we're planning on doing. But for us, I think there needs to be more investment. We need to do a better job with awareness. Unfortunately, screening has not been a great success in the United States. The best you can see in the literature is that maybe 10 to 15% of the screen-eligible population currently participates in a screening program. So something has to change there. We're big supporters and fans of the multi-cancer and single early cancer detection test that are focused in this arena, and those will positively impact this space and benefit us.
So you just led me into my last question. There's one last fun one to finish with. So obviously you sit on the diagnostic end of this landscape. There's more and more conversation about blood-based biomarker testing and potentially specifically for lung cancer and usually the high-risk population. And the way these are formulated is preferably with really high sensitivity, and they can afford lower specificity because inevitably a false positive just leads to adherence to computed tomography or CT scans, which is 10 to 15% adherence rate, so that works as well. So you essentially could benefit from this tailwind, or perhaps the fun question is, would you ever be open to either developing internally or acquiring some type of screening technology?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a massive opportunity. The short answer is yes. But what we know by looking at others is it's expensive, it's timely. There's 4 to 5, maybe even 6 others that are significantly ahead of us. We're more interested in seeing what their data looks like. I think you highlighted it. A false positive isn't necessarily that bad unless 99 out of 100 are false positives. And then you've got to figure out how do we find that needle in the haystack. That's where we come in. And I think that there could be great synergies there. But regardless, rising tide will raise all ships. I think any single cancer or multi-cancer early detection test focused on lung benefits us immensely because of what you said. They're going to bring more of the screen-eligible population into play. But after that CT scan, most physicians are going to start adopting Nodify. So we're supporters of theirs. We're eager for them to have success. And if something was to come our way, especially now that we have the expanded call point into primary care and pulmonology, we'll be very opportunistic.
Alrighty. Thank you very much, everyone.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks,
Scott. Yeah, appreciate it.